Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by one of the preeminent national security reporters of our time, Bill Gertz. He is, of course, the senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon and the prize-winning columnist for the Washington Times with his Inside the Ring column. He's the author of six terrific books, bestsellers all, I believe, including most recently The Failure Factory, How Unelected Bureaucrats, Liberal Democrats, and Big Government Republicans Are Undermining America's Security and Leading Us to War. Bill Gertz, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the show.
Well, the talk of the moment, of course, is the Iranian preliminary agreement concerning its nuclear weapons programs. When you joined us last week, Bill, you said something that was shocking, I think, and that is that the Pentagon seems to have been largely cut out of this negotiating process. I mean, there may have a representative and so on, but it doesn't seem as though it's been playing a central role in calculating what the implications may be of a defective deal. What are you hearing on that and the response of the Pentagon to the announced agreement?
Basically, yeah, the negotiations have been dominated by the State Department, and the secondary unit was the Energy Department, trying to look at the technical aspects of the uranium enrichment facilities and all of these things. So the Pentagon has kind of been on the sideline. They're not the intelligence community, on the other hand, will have a role in verifying this. And the president was giving the nation assurances that we would be able to tell when the Iranians are cheating. I'm not certain that that's the case at all. I believe that this is going to be very difficult. The Iranians in the past have obscured inspectors from the IAEA. So putting our trust in the International Atomic Energy Agency, I think, is also misplaced. It really looks like a bad deal from the outside of it. We have not seen the fine print of this framework agreement, preliminary framework agreement. So it's very difficult to tell whether this will actually be something that can prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, or if it's just basically designed to prevent Iran from building it in the next 10 years, which really looks to me like the case.
Yeah, well, look, if it's actually 10 years, that would be one thing. But, Bill, as we've been talking about in the course of the program, between secret programs and inadequate intelligence and the certainty that the Iranians are cheating, I mean, look, they're defying the International Atomic Energy Agency even before there's a deal. It doesn't seem to me to augur well that there will be better performance down the road. And Bill, what's your reading of the concerns that are now being expressed even more assertively by the Israelis, for example, the developments that are taking place in other parts of the Persian Gulf, the prospect that the Saudis may get nuclear weapons from Pakistan and perhaps the Turks and maybe even the Egyptians. I mean, does this look as though this is conducing to a more secure Middle East or something very different?
I think it's destabilizing, definitely, on many levels you mentioned. First of all, the Israelis are going to feel threatened. They've said that they regard Iran's nuclear program as an existential threat to their country. We've already seen statements and other actions by the Saudis indicating that they're probably going to develop their own nuclear weapon or ramp up their relationship with Pakistan's nuclear forces to be able to have a nuclear deterrent on hand. So this is going to create more instability in a region that's already racked with instability. It's a real troubling development, in my view.
Yeah, and then in addition to the instability is the possibility that it's a nuclear instability, and that's a whole different kettle of fish, as they say. Bill, let me switch gears. You've been reporting, I think, as well as not considerably better than anybody else about cyber threats. Evidently, we're now hearing the U.S. government expressing even more concerted warnings about that happening to American companies. At the same time, as you indicate, the Chinese are acknowledging publicly, remarkably, that they're sharply increasing their cyber warfare funding. What's happening on that front, and what does it portend?
Yeah, the first case involves China ramping up its cyber warfare capabilities to the tune of a 20 to 30% increase in the funding and resources devoted to that. Now, we know that China is either at the top or right alongside Russia as the top nation-state cyber warfare threats to the United States, and we've seen them penetrate computer networks ranging from the U.S. Transportation Command all the way to our defense contractor. So this is a growing threat. The intelligence reporting is that the Chinese have made an assessment and realized that they're lagging behind the U.S. in cyber warfare capabilities. So they are devoting massive resources. We don't have the exact figures, but it's in the millions and perhaps even billions of dollars putting towards this program for a long-term commitment to building up its cyber warfare capabilities. That's a troubling development. And the second thing is recently the FBI warned U.S. companies about a coming cyber attack in the next few days called Op Israel. It's several terrorist groups, some of them in the Middle East and North Africa, are threatening to conduct cyber attacks against Israeli and Jewish interests here and abroad. And they've sent out a warning telling companies to be prepared and get ready for what they call denial of service attacks, which are not large-scale attacks, but could have an impact and could involve the loss of information and services.
Yeah, and be disruptive. And Bill, just back on the Chinese, it goes without saying, and you have, again, documented this assiduously over many, many years. What the Chinese actually acknowledge they're doing is one thing. What they're doing above and beyond that is something altogether different. And it suggests, again, a very concerted effort to move aggressively into this cyber warfare space. And what they're doing already is problematic enough, let alone if it's intensified. Bill, speaking of cheating on international agreements, talk a bit about the latest evidence that the Russians are doubling down on their violations of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty.
Yes, just within the past 2 weeks, Russia conducted a flight test of one of their newest long-range missiles called the RS-26. This missile has been initially assessed as an ICBM and therefore somehow captured under the New START Treaty. However, the U.S. intelligence community believes that this missile is an intermediate range missile that is illegal under the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. And this is one of several tests that were conducted to INF ranges, which is renewing debate within the U.S. government over Russia's continuing violation of the INF treaty. We already know they have violated the treaty with the deployment or the testing of a new short-range cruise missile called the Iskander-K, which many fear will be the nuclear delivery system that Russia is threatening or has deployed in Crimea and is threatening to deploy near the Baltics, perhaps in Kaliningrad. So the Russian nuclear threat is definitely becoming a greater threat, and people in the intelligence community are beginning to become much more worried about it, as is the U.S. Strategic Command, which has also raised concerns.
Yeah, we're going to be talking more about this shortly with Ricky Ellison about basically the shortfalls in our missile defense capability. But, Bill, what you've described today and in your writings for months now in terms of the ramping up of the Russian missile capabilities and those of China, those of North Korea, those of Iran, this really does not seem to be a time when we're adequately appreciating the gravity of these developments, let alone taking appropriate steps to respond to them. Bill, we have less than a minute left. Taiwan, we had American fighters landing there for the first time that I can remember. Was that purposeful or by a sort of accident?
This was a so-called emergency landing by two F-18, Marine Corps F-18s based in Japan. But the timing of the landing appears to have been a political message sent by the Pentagon to China, because it followed by several days a major Chinese strategic nuclear bomber exercises right near Taiwan. So it appears that the Pentagon is trying to signal China that our support for Taiwan, which the U.S. in law is basically bound to defend from Chinese attack. So things seem to be picking up a bit on the political messaging side, at least as it relates to the Taiwan Strait issue.
Well, I certainly would like to see us basing some fighters on Taiwan rather than accidentally having to land on it from time to time. But at least this is a step, if it is indeed a signal in the right direction. Bill Gertz, as always, thank you so much for your time and the great work you do at the Washington Free Beacon, the Washington Times. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Again, as advertised, Ricky Ellison joins us to talk about missile defense and our yawning vulnerabilities in that space straight ahead.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.